listen up. You can be anything in the world, and God we trust. An architect, doctor, maybe an actress, but nothing comes easy. It takes much practice. Like, I met a woman who's becoming a star. She was very beautiful, leaving people in awe. Singing songs, Lena Horne, but the younger version. Hung with the wrong person, got a strong one at heroin. Cocaine, sniffing up drugs, all in the nose. Could have died so young, now looks ugly and old. No fun, cause now when she reaches for hugs, people hold their breath, cause she smells of corrosion and death. Watch the company you keep and the crowd you bring, cause they came to do drugs and you came to sing. So if you're gonna be the best, I'ma tell you how. Put your hand in the air and take the vow. I know I can,
I know I can,
be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
if I work hard at it,
I'll be where I wanna be.
Yo, 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 what's going on, man? This is E-Dub for the Who Got Next podcast. Thank you for tuning in for another episode. We are back. We are back. We are back. Hope everybody is doing well. This week, we're going to talk about education. If you know how I do the podcast, I try to hit every subject matter that I can, especially with people that I know in the city, and we are back on education. So this week, I am talking to a friend of mine. Her name is Ashley McKinley. How you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. So let me give you a little bit of background of Miss McKinley. She is, I'm going to call you the head honcho. You're the head honcho, but you are the head of school at Friendship Day School. Friendship Day School is a division of Friendship Missionary Baptist Church here in Charlotte. That's on the west side, right?
It is. The historic west side.
In Charlotte, we have to say that the historic west side of Charlotte, but it is a division of Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. If you live in Charlotte and never heard of Friendship Missionary Baptist Church, then you've been living under a rock, because Friendship is the go-to. Of course, we have a lot of churches. It's black people. Black people have a lot of churches. But that church has been doing a lot, and they are very prominent in that community of the West Side. And she just happened to be in charge of the education curriculum for Friendship Day School for the Sciences. It was established in 2017. That is correct?
That is correct.
All right. So pretty much fairly new. Just a little bit of information for about this school. Friendship Day, they go through K through 5, and they actually focus on science, science and the arts. So pretty much STEM, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, the long name is Friendship Day School for the Sciences and the Arts, mm-hmm. And we do have some pretty unique programs. I know that STEM is real big now, but definitely just know that there is a huge emphasis on the arts and the sciences because we know that those fields lack mm-hmm. children of color. Right, so right. We think that's a really important emphasis.
Further in this conversation, I am going to touch on that. But I just want to get a little bit of information about you. So I just kind of set the scene for you. 16 years in education. Unique, and this is why I wanted to talk to you. Of course, you've heard the show. You always talked about a previous show that I did with another preparatory school here in Charlotte. And the unique thing about, and I want to just do a contrast from both sides, which is why I wanted to talk to you. So in that instance, she had her own way of how she developed that school. In your case, you actually came from public schools. So I want to talk about that, and I want to talk about the differences between, the difference is number one. Number two, I want to talk about your experiences on that side of the coin versus you being on the private sector side of the coin. But before we start, how was your energy?
Yeah, listen, good. First, I want to say it's an honor to be on the show because I follow the show. Mm-hmm. I see the type of people that you have on your show mm-hmm. and a wide plethora. And
thank
so
you.
I appreciate now being a part of that fold and who mm-hmm. got next. So I got to start and say that. Energy is good. I started out this morning. I've done a cross country for youth meet for my babies at Friendship Day School. They ran. We're the only black school that was there. Mm. My babies did really good. Then I took my own babies to Paw Patrol Live, and then I'm here. So we're here. We've had a full day, and energy is great, and I'm excited.
Oh, wow. I know Paw Patrol is a whole nother atmosphere.
Listen.
Kids love Paw Patrol.
They love it. So I have two boys.
And it's Paw Patrol. They got a Paw Patrol Live right now, right?
Paw Patrol Live. So, they have a monopoly. They got the toys. They got the shows.
Right.
They got the different levels of the shows. Now they have live. So, yes, I've been doing all things kid this morning. Energy is always very, very good, but definitely happy, happy to be here today.
Okay. Now, I appreciate that. So talk about your early days of realizing education was a career choice that you wanted to take. Just doing a little bit of research, and I guess you're going to follow up on this. Your mother is a retired elementary school teacher.
Oh, yes.
Was she the, do you look at her as the starting point on why you wanted to get into education?
Definitely. I mean, obviously, you know, you grew up in a home, and my mom is a veteran teacher, right? Mm-hmm. She's from a small city in North Carolina. She's from Anson County, so she's from Wadesboro, Lylesville area. She'll tell you Wadesboro, but it's really Lylesville because she, you know, she's like, no one knows where that is.
Yeah, because I go through going to Fayetteville.
Yes.
Wadesboro is like that.
Yes.
Okay.
Very Anson quick. County. Just all that right. One. Yeah, Anson County. And so she moved to High Point with her family. She grew up in a big family, and my mom was actually the only one to go to college and finish college out of 7 kids.
Oh, wow.
Some eventually went maybe a little later, but, like, traditionally, my mom went through. And so I always had that model with her. She was always extremely passionate, always giving. So that's how I was raised. Mm-hmm. And, I went through some different career choices, but it was always kids. Like, I was like, oh, I want to be a neonatal nurse. Oh, I want to be, you know, a teacher. At one point, I said I wanted to be a superintendent. We'll put a pin in that. But, she absolutely started it, but I think that my heart has always been in it. And so it was not really, I didn't go through any major changes or anything when I was at UNC Charlotte. I majored in elementary education, actually birth to K. My mom said, well, you know, give yourself a little wiggle room. You may not always want the babies. Do K-6, and that was really good advice. But it's always been there. It's always been my choice.
And when you say K-6, are you talking about, is that the age range?
Yeah, normally your certification, you're either birth to kindergarten or kindergarten to sixth grade, which is considered elementary education. Then if you do secondary is sixth to ninth grade. Mm-hmm. And then if you do, you know, upper ninth to 12th. So that's typically how they break up your degree if it's just for teaching. But then when you get admin license, then it ranges from K to 12.
Okay. All right. I wasn't never sure about that. All I just say is K through whatever. Yeah. And I just look at K as being a starting ground, but I didn't know about the age.
Yeah.
So talk about your path. And you get some individuals that want to just teach all the way through. But then you have the other ones that say, okay, I enjoy being around the kids. I enjoy teaching the kids, but I don't think I want to stay in the classroom long. So with you, you actually went through, you started out in the classroom, and then you went to counseling, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
What made you decide to do that? Was it because you just didn't want to do the classroom anymore, or do you feel that you had a better opportunity to reach kids in a different capacity just due to your personality?
Yeah, it was definitely the second. The fact that, you know, I worked at J.T. Williams Middle School, John Taylor Williams Middle School. I was under a principal that really wanted to honor, you know, the person who it was named after, so didn't want to do the abbreviation. And so, you know, I was there, and it was tough. I mean, you know, I understand I shared, I looked like my kids, but I didn't come from the background they did.
Right.
And so, you know, it was really, really hard. It was difficult. I was 22. The challenges just didn't end, even though I did very well and built great relationships with kids there. But then I decided, you know, I don't want to leave schools, but maybe I can impact them at a different level and within a different capacity with my skill set.
Right.
Which is why I got the master's in counseling.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you went to counseling. So when you did counseling, it wasn't elementary. What does counseling start for?
Yeah, good education question. So basically when you do counseling, like I said, it's almost like that admin license. You get the span of K through 12.
Okay.
So I decided to do school counseling. I was down in Rock Hill and Winthrop University. And so that was a great program. Met a lot of great people and learned a lot of great skills. And so you intern just like you do with student teaching. You intern and you do clinical hours. I was required to do 600 clinical hours. And so I did it between high school and middle school because I was still teaching. I was teaching full time. I was going to school at night. And so, yeah, that's how that kind of went. And when I graduated, J.T. Williams was actually closing. They had selected to close 3 middle schools in Charlotte, and they were selected due to poor test scores and that kind of thing. And so I decided, okay, well, it's time for me to get this counseling job. I'm not going to go back to teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I was down in a K-8 school, Berry Hill, for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I interned in high school and loved it. I was at Mallet Creek High School and just really grew a passion for it. So that was interesting because I'd always been at kind of the K-6 world.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I went up to high school and really started getting a passion for those kids because you see them, mm-hmm. you're getting ready to help them matriculate to college.
Right.
That was very, very rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I ended up Independence High School. Loved it. You're not going to hear me say any experience I didn't love because it grew me. It mm-hmm. built me.
Regardless of the challenge.
Regardless. It was always just, it's why I'm where I'm at now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I worked at Indy. My husband got a promotion, scooped us out of town. I went mm-hmm. out of town for a few years, came back, worked for the learning community as a graduation coach. And I worked with all at-risk youth
mm-hmm.
to help them get graduated on time. Again, extremely rewarding, just learned so much, got social work experience in, knocked on doors, got kids about the bed, mm-hmm. got them to class, did all that. And then opportunity for admin opened up because I've always had the leadership piece in,
mm-hmm.
always. And so I obtained that degree and, you know, the rest is really history. Became an assistant principal in Charlotte, up at Bradley Middle in Huntersville. Again, magnificent experience, mm-hmm. wonderful families. But the friendship day school opportunity came, and it just, it was my first opportunity to step out on faith.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had this kind of plan and tenure and retirement and all these things mm-hmm. with Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools.
Right.
And here's this over here, this really unique opportunity to grow this fantastic mm-hmm. place. It was already a gym,
mm-hmm.
but just as a young African-American female, what could I do there?
Right.
How could I take everything that I just said
mm-hmm.
and make Friendship Day School just catapult?
Were you reluctant to go? And the reason why I say reluctant, were you complacent? And what I mean by complacent, being in public schools. Because understanding that, to me, well, ain't no understanding to me, this is what it really is. You know, growing up, you look at certain professions. Certain professions, if you go along with this path, then you are going to retire. Like, mm-hmm. I work in corporate America. Your spouse works in corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
We see things differently because we never know what's going to happen from day to day. No matter how confident you are in what your skill set is or your job, we just live in the day and age of 2023. You can go to work one day. It don't matter how much money you're making, how great you're doing. You go to work one day, your job ain't there no more.
And that's it.
That's possible. But in education, it's really not like that unless a school is selective for whatever reason.
Right.
But as far as you having a license and a teaching degree, you pretty much can get a job anywhere.
This is true. And, you know, and I'll be honest, I don't love that about my profession.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't love, you know, and this is no shade to anyone, but it's like, I can't wake up, you can't wake up tomorrow, and I want to go be, you know, a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
I think their job is amazing, so awesome. Love my dentist. Shouts out to Dazzle Dentistry. Well, another black ladies, but I loved it. I would love to do her job. Mm-hmm. I can't just wake up and go do it. That
right.
woman has trained, worked, built her business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes people can just come into education, right? Because we're so needed. We're so sought after.
Mm-hmm.
For me, you ask, was it complacency?
And I don't mean that in a negative way.
Yeah, it's just far as like it was security. That's why I said to myself, oh, this is the first time I am mm-hmm. really taking a huge risk.
Right, right.
Right? Taking a huge risk. And I'm not a risk taker typically.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been something about, I think, since I became a mother, I
not even calculated risk.
Yeah, calculated, but
everything has to be planned out in order for you to say, okay, I'm going to do this. But it's not like you're going to jump out on a leap of faith in those capacities.
Not in those capacities, because yeah, like you said, we have things to pay, right?
Right.
I have two small people depending on me. I have
mm-hmm.
a husband. I'm not gonna just, you know, I've never been like a fly by the seat of my pants mm-hmm. type of person. I would say I've been very type A, which is why this move for me was really led by something different.
Low-key practical.
Low-key.
High-key practical.
High-key practical, yeah. For
that's
sure.
My mother retired in education, and she is super practical.
Yes. And like, my mom had a stroke when I told her I was leaving. Like, she was proud of me,
mm-hmm.
but she is very, I mean, she taught for 34 years, retired, she's getting her retirement.
She stayed in the same she really didn't change much as far as like.
She did one small change and she was scared when she did because she it was later on in her career and she was nervous about principals hiring her at her age, but it was just same thing. The school was going down and she needed a change.
Mm-hmm.
But she got hired with no problem. They scooped her right up. She was a master teacher. But yeah, like she was freaking out. But I was like, Ma, everything's going to be okay. It's going to all work out.
Mm-hmm. So with. We're going to get the friendship.
Okay.
So talk about going from guidance counselor to assistant principal. Like, what makes, because a lot of, you know, some people just want to stay.
Yeah.
Is that the natural step? Like, is it, like, no. What's the natural step when you go from teacher to possible guided counselor? What's normally the next step after that?
Yeah. Most people stay there because it's a master's degree in counseling.
Mm-hmm.
That I wouldn't say that's a natural step, but it was really natural for me because mm-hmm. I felt like, if I've been a teacher and then I've also now been a school counselor,
mm-hmm.
then I've got it from every angle.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now I can really, once I step into the leadership role, I can really understand some of the key roles mm-hmm. in the building because I've played those roles.
Right.
The natural step typically is teacher to some type of facilitator or literacy coach or something like that. It's like kind of like an elevated position. Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools does something called multi-classroom leaders,
mm-hmm.
MCLs, and they're like a, you know, these people are typically just bomb in the classroom, and then they come out to help coach other teachers.
And those are the ones that normally kind of like travel, like they'll go from like region to region or something
something like that. Okay. But then some of them are dedicated just to one school to really help the teachers understand their data and how that data should be used to help move kids. So
mm-hmm.
That's typically the trajectory. Most people don't do what I did, but it made sense for me.
Were you recruited?
To which job?
Friendship. So we're going over friendship now.
Okay. Yes.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at, because we had a conversation. I'm trying to figure out how to frame it. Because we had a conversation about this as far as like how you kind of got over there.
Yeah.
So as far as the recruitment process goes, like, how did that come about? Was it just a fly-by-night thing or it was just opportunity?
Yeah. So really, again, like, shouts out to the founders and the first principal. She just really, they loved her. Her name is Linda Comer. And she did a great job because, you know, you're starting something from the ground up.
Yeah.
That's no joke. And you're talking about educating children. She was a veteran principal who came out of retirement to do this, which was amazing. And so she retired through the middle of the year. And so I learned of the school because we were pursuing the school for my six-year-old, who's, you know, he went there in kindergarten, now he's in first, but I wasn't looking for a job there, but it was suggested to me. So I won't say recruited, but suggested, you know. Like,
they put a bug in your ear to think about it.
And at the time, my little baby was 8 months old. You know, my husband works like 65 hours a week. So it's like, man, I don't know if this is a fit for me right now. My plate was very heavy at Bradley. I would say the lead AP only because we had newer folks that were there coming to the building.
Mm-hmm.
Not lead necessarily from years of experience, but lead just because I've been in the building for the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got suggested and I kind of was like, I don't know if that's going to be a good fit, especially if we want to really take my child there. That's going to be kind of, you know, but then I said, well, what if I don't even apply? And then I'm wondering, right, 6 months later, what could happen?
Mm-hmm.
If I don't get it, when God's will. If I get it, it was.
Right.
And so that's how that kind of happened. And the process was, it wasn't quick. I thought they had either moved on or figured something else out. And again, I was secure. I was happy at my school. And then it came back up near the summer, summer 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And, summer 2022, pardon me. And yes, here we are.
Here we are. So with friendship, and talk about, again, I love to hear the differences between what you think so far with just your research. How is it running a program for a school under the guidance from a church?
Yeah. It is... It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It is. What I will say, though, is the founders were really intentional about trying to make sure that Friendship Day School was a separate entity. Because when I was doing my research for my own son, I didn't realize it wasn't Christian. So that's a big misconception, everybody who will be listening to this. It's non-denominational. It's not Christian. We share the building, mm-hmm. but we don't go to chapel. We don't do Bible. And I like that because we could scare away potential families who are like, oh, I love what you're doing, but don't want you talking to my child about, you know, heaven and hell. I want to talk to my child about that.
And none of that is in the curriculum.
It is not. It is not in our daily curriculum. So it's similar. We use some of the same curriculum that CMS is using.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But we do have some freedom and flexibility in terms of, you know, there's not like a finite pacing guide and a finite, mm-hmm. you know, way you have to do it. And so I think my teachers really like that a lot. You know, just not having the big network. I'm used to being able to pick up my phone and call many friends that I have in the right. district. And I can still call them. They're great.
Mm-hmm.
Lot of good resources that I've built over the 16 years. But, you know, they don't do what I do anymore. They're not at a small, all African-American private school that was born out of a church.
And then their budget is coming from a big pool.
Correct.
Of the system.
Correct.
Friendship is not that. And that's absolutely actually, and another misconception, most private schools, they're built off of different type of funding. And it depends on how you set that funding. Is that correct?
That's correct. So just, and I'm glad you said that, you know, I think the edifice that we're in can have people disillusioned. Because as you said, if you don't know friendship missionary, you're under a rock.
And right.
It's a big, beautiful brick.
Can't miss it. If you go down Betty Ford, you can't miss it.
Prominent church, beautiful, with really strong leaders as a part of their congregation. Former mayor is there, helped design the building. I mean, just so many players, so many stakeholders in the community, and well-respected.
Right.
And even young and old, you know, coming up through there. And so I think the misconception is that, oh, they're doing great. You know, oh, they got everything.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a tuition that's pretty low in comparison to what we're offering. And so there's a lot of monetary support that we need, but it's not through church. It's right. not church mission. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's that's different because, like you said, in CMS, you know, public schools, we get taxpayer dollars to fund it. You know, there's bond referendums and all that when you vote.
Right.
We don't have any of that.
Right. So you talked about tuition is low. Is it low because you want to remain competitive? Or is it something else? Because again, now the reason why I ask that question is because let's keep it a book. Now I'm about to start getting my nitty-gritty. When you think of a lot of private schools, you see it from the white neighborhoods. You see it from that standpoint. And we see how much those tuitions cost. Sometimes those tuitions are higher than college education. And we have seen where parents for these kids will break their necks to get in there. And with African Americans, you really don't see that much. With a few schools in the Charlotte community that are private, you know, of course, you're willing to accept anybody, but we know what the focus is. You really are focusing on our people. You're focusing on African Americans.
Sure.
So with that being said, about the tuition, why is it low? And I hope I could.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's important to be transparent.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, 2017, right, is when the founding year, and just 3 short years later, we hit a worldwide pandemic.
Right.
Kids are at the house, you know, on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Lost some people there because it's like I'm paying tuition for my child to be on Zoom.
Right.
You know, and we didn't know how long that thing was going to stretch out.
Mm-hmm.
That was a hard time for educators across the country, private, public, charter, you name it. It's difficult. And so the tuition started off low because I think the idea was to provide a private education to our community without breaking the bank. But as you grow and as the needs grow,
money grows too.
and the wants grow. Mm-hmm. You know, I have families that come to me and request things, and I'm a visionary, be clear. Like, I am not one is like, oh, we're doing mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
I have said to our CFO and I've said to many people, you know, incorrect language, incorrect grammar, saying, y'all want to head to school or nah? Like, what do y'all want? Because if you want me and you want what comes with me in taking this school to the next level, there's some things that we are going to need that no one else has asked for before, and it's not unreasonable. So, you know, they started off with arts and sciences and Suzuki violin being a portion of it. Well, one Suzuki violin, a child's, is $400. We've got 74 kids at our school. So if you're going to offer that program and we want the kids to have a one-to-one, that's money.
Yeah.
A violin instructor, and our violin instructor is top-notch. It costs money. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's one of those things that as our programs have grown, and if we want top-notch people, if we want top-notch teachers, if we want the cream of the crop, we have to respect their craft and we have to give them that. But it started off with one classroom.
Right.
It started off with retired educators who are already getting money from their retirement, and they maybe don't require as much to come in and teach.
But they pretty much volunteered because they saw something special.
Absolutely. But now we're at the level where we've grown, and in order to attract that talent, I need to be able to pay that talent. In order, you know, because, yes, CMS is offering the retirement, the package, this, the that, the signing bonus. Why are we attractive? And it can't just be money, right? It's not just money. It wasn't money for me. So it's like, okay, well,
right.
But I think they kept it low because of our community and who we're serving. But our dynamic, we have a melting pot. We have a lot of scholars that are, we call our baby scholars. We have a lot of scholars that, you know, their socioeconomic status is a full range. You know, working class to all the way up, lawyers, doctors, researchers, whomever.
I think it's also about experiences too. With students, depending on their socioeconomic background, you know, you want to give them the opportunity to believe and dream. And if you don't have an environment in school where you can do that, then how can that work? And based off of what you said before about the budget and how Black people think, let's keep it a buck. You know, we know how it is. So I always say, and I go through this with my own individual endeavors, where I be telling certain people about things they want, and they don't understand the budget. They don't understand. Look, you want caviar and champagne on a Corona budget. You know, Coronas are cheap. You can buy those anywhere. You know, but if you want these things, you're going to have to pay. So are you going to complain and moan about it, or just be mad about it? No, you're going to have to try to figure it out. With that being said, you know, you're relatively young. So how was that coming into that environment? When you go into private school, because you kind of just brought it up, you had a lot of retired educators. You had a lot of retired educators. Look, man, we know how our people are. We know how our parents are, our grandparents are.
Yes.
They do not like change.
No.
So how was it when you finally got on board? Like, was it smooth sailing? Be honest. Was it smooth sailing, or did you have you bump head with some of them?
Yeah.
With some folks?
It wasn't even so. I'm gonna talk about that in twofold, if you don't mind. I'll talk about the retired educators first, because that's what you
right. Could they start? They was the one that kind of started.
They did. But to be honest, by the time I got there and was employed as being the head of school, I only had one retired educator. That was still there. And it didn't go smooth. Because while I absolutely believe in our motto is exemplifying excellence, I believe in that. But I don't believe that has to boil down to sit down, be quiet, don't move, the military. You know, I just feel like we as a people, that's kind of how we feel that we have to rear children.
Right.
And that is not, and people can say that's my young mindset, whatever, but I actually have a rather old school mindset. You said, you're youngish. Exactly. My mom is 74 years old.
Right.
You know, I was raised by an educator. Like, right. I have that.
Nice we know how the education was when we were growing
up.
With our parents and our grandparents.
Correct.
They were stern and strict. They was
very.
Yeah.
But I believe in firm but loving. Stern and strict is part of firm and loving. You know what I mean? But it just doesn't, you know, so I would say that was definitely a bumpy road. Some, you know, most of the older folks were very receptive. So I couldn't, I mean, they were the ones that were on the board, very receptive. I think that they saw my passion and they saw, you know, just my work ethic and my background. Mm-hmm. And they were receptive and open and excited for what was happening. The change that was the hardest were some of the parents that had been there prior to me. Mm-hmm. And maybe those babies had been there since kindergarten, first, second. Mm-hmm. And they had hit some bumps along the road that I didn't have anything to do with the bumps.
Right.
But, you know, now I'm sitting in the seat. Mm-hmm. So now I'm hearing about how upset, how disgruntled they may have been. Mm-hmm. Because, as you know, it's a teacher shortage. If everybody don't know, it's a teacher shortage out here, everywhere. And so they went through some, you know, some turbulence. And I didn't get hired until very late in the summer, like less than a month before school started. So, you know, I'm good, but I'm not that good. You know,
right.
That's going to be a common struggle for anyone that I had to hire a lot of folks that I would have never traditionally probably hired.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, but it's just we're out here in August.
You got to make some moves quick.
I either got to make moves quick or I have to call up families and say, I don't have a classroom for you.
Right.
And either one is bad. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that when you talk about the smooth, no, not smooth, but still great.
Mm-hmm.
Because it set up a situation for me to understand, okay, I compare it to me running a small business, but it's school. It's hard. It's a challenge, but I'm passionate about kids enough where that's why I keep saying to you, right. It's good because I gotta take what wasn't good and what was bumpy and make it to where, how are we going to do this for the 23-24 school year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What sold you about friendship? You know, you talk about, you know, you kind of looked into it. Somebody put a bug in your ear. After you finally got that call and they said, look, we want to move forward with you as our head of school, what sold you about them?
Yeah. You know, it was just a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the opportunity to be a part of something that I feel is going to be very historic for not only our kids, but for the city. I loved the idea of exposing our children to these unique opportunities in school, like the Suzuki violin, like yoga and mindfulness, and just the power in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then just for me personally to step out on faith. Like, this was such a big deal for me as a human. So it sold me because I'm like, well, Dr. Steve Perry is one of mine. I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah, I know he is.
Love Dr. Steve Perry.
He all over CNN and things like that. So that's how I first heard about him. And yeah. I think, don't he help, did he run one school?
So
or he did?
He has multiples. He has multiple. This Capital Prep, and so, which is a charter school. So,
okay.
You know, he has some opinions about private school. But, you know, I'm both, right? Because I've done more years in public school than I have in the private section. But yeah, it sold me just the feeling, the opportunity to know that those kids will remember me forever and what we're doing in our building. I've had parents come to me and say how, man, I've seen my child's confidence skyrocket.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know that's something special. If we weren't doing something special, the kids, they would tell you, just listen to the babies. You just talk to them.
Oh, they're honest.
Very honest. They'll let you know in a second what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong.
So as far as, like, you've been there for like a year and a half now, right? Or
yeah,
2 years?
Yeah, so I got hired July 20th, 2022.
Okay.
So not even quite a year and a half.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's go, not quite a year and a half. So let's go your first year. Let's go your if you're thinking about it from a calendar perspective, it's a full calendar year. How would you grade yourself? How would you grade yourself in your first year at Friendship?
Oh, that's a tough question. Holistically grade myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's my analytical part coming out.
But it's your opinion. This is your opinion.
I think with staff and personnel, And this is, it's no pointing fingers. It just, I mean, I had my mom laughing on the way here talking, and she was complaining about some customer service. I said, my listen, nothing is the same anymore.
Right.
But I would say personnel and building relationships with personnel, I would say that was like a C, because I knew that I didn't have the right people.
Mm. You didn't build your right team yet?
No.
Because you was trying to...
just get people in the door. I mean, and I shared that with the board and the team. Like, they knew. I mean, that's no, like, guarantee if somebody from CMS is sitting right beside me, CMS principal. Exact same story.
Right.
I mean, it's just where we are right now. People are running away from the profession. So I would say academia and processes and procedures, there were some things that needed to be tightened up. And, you know, again, you know, I am youngish. So, you know, I love a good old Google Docs and Bitly's and Canva. And so I kind of streamlined some things for our school. And I would say that would be like an A, because I'm very strong in that.
Right.
And I feel really good. I would give ourselves a solid B in academics, because I introduced... for our kids and achievement, because I introduced MAP testing, and they weren't doing MAP testing. They were doing something called the Iowa test, which we don't have. We can't take EOGs like other schools can. But I just felt like the Iowa test, what other schools are taking the Iowa test around us? How can I measure how we're doing at Friendship Day School? We may think we're doing good, but do we know if we're really doing good? Right?
Do a lot of private schools do that? What you did, or do they just not try to find a way to establish something to
think it's a hodgepodge. I have gotten I have done some research and visited some places, and I've been surprised.
That's a good question. Like, it made me think about it, because we always hear about the EOGs, of course, but I only hear it from public schools. Like, I don't get too many. I do know people in the private sector, but you don't never hear them talk about, ooh, our kids got some type of end-of-grade testing to...
Yeah. So the MAP stands for Measures of Adequate Progress. And so it's a nationwide, nationally normed test. And so kids in CMS take it. And the reality is, we just graduated our first class, and the majority of those kids did go to public school. So I can't let them leave me with apples and they're doing oranges over here. Like, I needed them to have some exposure to it, and to there to be some alignment with what they are going to encounter when they leave me. So I don't know if, again, you know, I told you I'm a visionary, so I don't know if other private schools do that. But I do feel like there is a little bit of a laissez-faire attitude in terms of curriculum.
And for the curriculum, how do you feel about the curriculum in today's modern era? When we grew up, it was fairly simple. In my personal opinion, I think other people would say that there were just, to me, some things that, at me being at 42, if I would have known then, it would have made things a little bit easier. Now, we see some classes, and we see now in modern day education, we see some of those things starting to be adapted. Do you do that? And I understand you're doing K-5, but that's to me, that's also the impressionable stages of those little things that kids can learn. And that could be anything. I know you say arts and science. But again, writing a check.
Yeah, so it's stuff I'm so glad you said that. Well, first of all, we are getting ready to do like an in-service after our first quarter. Because, you know, I have a lot of new teachers at my school, not new to the profession, but new to Friendship. And, you know, just want to let them get their footing, know their classroom, get to know their parents. Because education, a lot is thrown at us. A lot of acronyms, a lot of requirements, a lot of asks. And so we have five big focus areas that to impact our kids. And one of them in there is handwriting. And with the math and the STEM portion, we're going to do a unit on financial literacy. Most of my teachers, I have three teachers out of my six that they're doing their incentives in their classroom are based on economics, with debits and credits and fines and interest. And so, we those soft skills, right? Like you said, writing a check, because they get out and they have no clue what to do. But I think there's where I said there's that mixture of old school with me, because like handwriting has not been an emphasis. because kids are typing and texting on everything. And we do know that. We understand. But they need to be able to write legibly so someone can read what they've written.
Listen, I know some grown people who can't write.
Right.
My handwriting is pretty impeccable.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to tell you how impeccable it was. So I told my parents the story. They was like, so I was the kid, and I'm going early, like fourth or fifth grade. I was the kid that if you needed something signed, I could sign it.
Oh, okay.
I was that nice.
You were the plug
I was
for
that
the
nice.
Signatures.
I was that nice.
Okay.
I was super nice with that. Mm-hmm. I have always looked, and I'm a military kid. So me being a military kid and living overseas, everything when I'm doing anything, I have to give my father's social security number.
Gotcha.
To this day, I still know that man's social security number because I had to say it so much.
Gotcha.
And I just learned his handwriting. So when I started picking up handwriting skills, and nobody talked, I just learned on my own because I was always saying, oh, one day I'm going to be famous. So if I'm going to be famous, my handwriting got to be nice. That's so I would just do the handwriting and stuff like that. But anyway, that went all the way through high school where they were like, yo, hey, man, I need something. I need something signed.
You shouldn't be telling the educator that.
I'm joking.
Wow, bro. So, hey, but hey, pay attention to. All right, I'm gonna give you a little tidbit. Pay attention to kids and their handwriting.
I do.
If it's great, they're going somewhere with it.
They're going somewhere.
So my handwriting was always great. So it was like, yo, I need something. I need this sign. I was like, all right, bet. So I'd say, all right, tell me what you want to sign. And who is it? Like, it doesn't matter. I don't care if it's a man or a woman. Give it to me. Let me see that signature. Let me play with it for a little bit. And then I just keep playing with it. And I'm like, yo, how is that? And they say, yo, that's good. While my memory is so strong, I was like, all right, bet. I'm going to do it the same way on that one. So, yeah. I was that guy. That was secret skill.
Okay, I got you.
Secret skill. I mean, I still do it to this day. I mean, I don't forge anything, of course. Let me get that clip. Hold on. I don't forge anything. But what I'm saying is I do practice that still because my handwriting, as I've gotten older, it just got better. I'm like, oh, shoot, let me see if I can write that. But I was that guy that.
Yeah, but so like, and since I spoke on the five areas just to understand who I am and what we're doing at our school, it's going to be vocabulary and context because, you know, and that's one thing I laugh. You say we know us. I mean, talking about change, y'all let the spelling test go. Spelling outside of context means nothing.
You don't think spelling?
Listen to me.
I like spelling bees at 42 years old.
Not spelling B.
You just don't like spelling. Like
not
you don't.
Spelling B, because think about a spelling bee. Mm-hmm. They're asking you the babies, the kids, origin of the word. They're asking you the origin
of the like
word.
That. I don't like that part because I don't understand how that makes you spell it right.
So let me give you.
I don't understand
okay,
that.
So let me give you a little something. I'm going to come. Okay. So our five areas are vocabulary and context, handwriting, mechanics and conventions, community service, public speaking, and our fifth one is academic achievement and growth because all those four things I mentioned prior to are going to help the academic achievement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Let's go back to that spelling. The reason why you said you don't like that part, but the reason why this makes sense, when they ask the origin of the word, is because every word has a root word. And you put your suffixes and your prefixes. And if we teach our babies, our scholars, those suffixes, pardon me, can't get that out today, and prefixes, if they know anti means against, I don't care if that word has 20,000 letters in it, they're going to know that it's going against something. If they ask about the origin of a root word and it's Latin or it's Greek, they're going to be able to connect it. So. Spelling onomatopoeia means nothing to me. I'm not going to remember that later unless it's contextual, unless it's going on in something in the reading that we're reading.
Right.
So I say all that to say that we want to strengthen our children's vocabulary so that they can speak eloquently, so that they can write eloquently, and so that they know when they're in a room, when they hear a word that they're unfamiliar with, they don't feel intimidated.
I can see that. And I guess I was speaking from my standpoint as far as like you asking me to spell something. I'm not thinking of the origin or anything like that. I'm just trying to figure out, okay, oh, I've heard this, or when you have certain patterns of words, I'm assuming that this is what it is. I'm going to figure it out from that standpoint. So that's how I was looking at it.
Gotcha.
But I could totally understand how a child understands because, again, they're only picking up how they learn. So that's the best way for them to learn. And hey, all for it. I don't care how you get to the destination, as long as you get there.
Right.
So that was always my thing with that. What do you find was the biggest adjustment from being a leader? So what was the biggest adjustment going from counseling to the head of school?
So, well, there was one stop in between, right? So I was
assistant principal. I apologize.
No, we're good. So counseling to assistant principal, honestly, that transition wasn't as big because you were putting out fires as a counselor as well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so, and I also, too, my last step before becoming an assistant principal was a graduation coach. I had 4 high schools. Mm-hmm. I had Butler, Independence, Northwest School of the Arts, and Rocky River High School. So I floated between those 4 schools, and everyone that I was working with was not going to graduate on time. So I was putting out all these fires. I was dealing with upset parents. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All of that. And then when I went to assistant principal, it was just putting out fires, but at a different level. You know what I mean?
And mainly you're doing it for one particular school.
Yes, just one school. The transition from AP to principal is that now I had 2 other assistant principals that we could lean in on and, you know, support. It's just me. You know what I mean? I do have an academic dean who's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Would that be comparable to an assistant?
Yes, okay. Yes. But she's retired CMS and had a wonderful experience, and she was an IB coordinator, literacy facilitator, master teacher, all those things. But yeah, that I mean, just really wearing the crown, really having everyone come to you with the issue, you know, that's the biggest adjustment.
Mentorship. How important was mentorship going through your career in education?
Important. Mm-hmm. You know, we joke now about, you know, what is it, Gen Z now? Mm-hmm. It's like, we know everything. Right. We don't need any help. No. I have always had a mentor who was older than me and a veteran educator. I have one right now that I talk to. He's a retired principal, and he called me the other morning to check in on me. And I talked to him at least twice a month, at least, sometimes more, running situations by him, having a safe space to talk, having him, you know, read over something for me if, you know, I feel like it's that heavy and I need that. But just I'm not a person that is too big to learn. So mentorship and learning, you got to be a lifelong learner when you attend. Yeah. You have to be. You can't just say, oh, I've been doing this 30 years.
And I'm assuming you have to adjust and pivot a lot.
A lot. You do. The pandemic taught me that, though. Like, when we talked about type A and you said calculated risk and all that earlier on in the interview, like, man, you want to put together a plan and be like, nope, we're not using it. I mean, spend hours on a plan. It's like, can't use that. They just came down and said, or the CDC said, I mean, it really prepared me to be like, you just got to, sometimes your plan is not your plan.
Then you got to be ready for that plan, for the pivot.
Exactly.
Okay. Talk about, and again, on my podcast, I like to talk about the identity of Charlotte. But what I want to do is I want to kind of condense in with the identity of Charlotte in education. And the reason why I say that is because, and you give me your experience, having 16 years, so pretty much you was 15 years in CMS, right?
That's correct.
So you've seen, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to step out of line if I say this. This is just my opinion. I moved to Charlotte in 2007, but before that, if you're looking at all the counties in North Carolina, so I went to high school in Wayne County, Goldsboro, but then I also went to school at Fayetteville State, so I was able to be around that curriculum, and then a little bit in Greensboro for the 3 years being in Guilford County schools. And then you hear about CMS. At one point, CMS was the creme de la creme.
Oh yes,
like it was the shiznit-o fantastic. You couldn't do anything without. There was no way you can get around North Carolina and not know who CMS was.
Right.
CMS was the go-to county. As years went on, things have changed. So how do you think about the landscape and the identity of Charlotte when it comes to education, period? Do you feel private schools is starting to build that cachet over CMS? Do you think there's a lot of parents that are saying, you know what, I'm just not believing in the public school system, so let me go over to the private school, the private school sector. So how do you feel about that when it comes? I know it's kind of broad, but trying to figure out, you know, what your opinion is, because you came from, I want to say that probably could have played a big role in it, because, okay, I've done this, I've seen this, now I need to see what this looked like over here. So how was you able to, so how do you feel about the identity of that?
Yeah, so more so even than private school versus CMS, the charter schools, which there's this misconception out there, you know, if you're not an educator, you don't know. A lot of people think charter is private. It is not.
Yeah, and I've asked that question before.
Yeah, but a lot of people still think that. So if you're listening,
the charter is public.
It is a public school. They get government funds. But I think a lot of people choose charter when they don't want to go to their neighborhood school. They don't want to go to their Charlotte MEC school. But I have to say this, like, I don't, in our community, I don't think that private is outdoing public. I don't, because I look at, I have parents that come say, we really want to come here, we love it, but we can't afford it, even though my tuition is only $9,000. And I say only $9,000, I understand that's not like a diss to someone that cannot afford that. Only $9,000 for what we're giving. We're giving about a $13,000 education, and we're only charging $9,000. And all of the local schools and, you know, like a Cannon school or Charlotte Latin, Charlotte Catholic, they're $20,000. You know what I mean? So I don't think that we're really, in our community specifically, we do not have a monopoly over CMS. I think people give CMS a bad rap. Like, people will talk about their CMS homeschool and never visit it. I'll ask and say, have you gone over for a visit? Or have you scheduled a tour? Or have you spoken with the principal? See, I'm not that. You're not going to come to Friendship Day School and hear something negative about CMS.
Like, right.
You're just not. I'm not going to do that. I didn't have a negative experience, and I just feel like it also boils down to your involvement, you showing up for your kids and really pressing that button about, hey, I really want to bring them here. These are my concerns. I'm concerned about your school report card. I'm concerned about the area. I'm concerned, whatever you're concerned about, but you got to go. So I think a lot of people, CMS is, no, let's time out and let's just see if you've done your homework and you've done, you know what I mean, your research. But I would think, honestly, my opinion is I think the charter schools have more of a monopoly right now than anybody because it's like a private school feel, you would say. Like a lot of charter schools wear a uniform and all that, but then the parents aren't paying.
Don't even get me started on that. So because that's pretty much a business system, right? Where only so many kids can get in there, and you have to be selected. Like, so what?
It's a lot of controversy of charter schools, public schools, and private. And right now, it's something out. We accept North Carolina Opportunity Scholarship funds, which, you know, you say keep it a buck. It wasn't designed for us, right? It was designed for people fleeing their homeschool, people not wanting to be in minority, whatever. And so this year they awarded $6,400, $6,492, in fact. But my tuition is $9,000. So I have a lot of my families that use that, which is amazing. It's to their advantage. But $6,492 is not putting a dent in $25,000 anywhere else. So you see what I mean? So they talk about this vouchers, and there's a lawsuit and everything going on right now. But for me, it helps my babies. It helps my families. And so, but yeah, the charter school situation, that debate versus the private school, it can get very dicey. People get up in arms about it.
Do the board of directors, I don't know how it works for you all, but do you get full autonomy on how to figure out ways to raise funds?
That's a great question. I would say yes. But we are in a growing phase, right? And so we just recently inducted some new board members because it was primarily made up of an older group. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like, you know, we got to bring some different folks to the table that have different connections that could help us. Mm-hmm. Because, again, we're not a Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
We are our own 501c3. So if we are, then we need that latitude to try to figure out. But I do have some really amazing board members that are just rolling up their sleeves and figuring out, you mm-hmm. know, ideas and what to do. But it's going to be, you know, we're in our infancy.
Mm-hmm. Still relatively young. I mean, yeah. For you coming in and just going, you know, over a year, mm-hmm. and then 2017, compared to any place, that's still new.
Yes.
You don't consider, I think normally it takes about after 10 years for somebody to say, oh, this school is established. So yes. It's like any time between that 10-year gap or low, you're going to be a relatively new school.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, like I said, I know that it's going to be an opportunity to be part of something really special.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need funds, and we do need unique ways to raise them. I did just submit my first grant application to TD mm-hmm. Bank. Shouts out to them. They just built a location in that West Corridor.
Yeah, it did.
And so they provide some funds, and hopefully we'll see what happens. But I just submitted my first grant. And, you know, those kinds of things is unique experience for me and the mm-hmm. folks that are on my team, because I've never done that.
You never written a grant?
I've never written a grant. So that was really cool to see that experience and all the documentation that I needed, and, you know, Spirit coming up and being like having a think tank for what we need this money for and mm-hmm. how we're going to use it. Because a lot of them are like, even though you need it for general operating expense, they're like, nope, we're not going to fund that. They like programmatics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, they get real specific to what
they're doing. Very specific.
For.
Yes.
Could use it towards another. Because right now, I guess, as far as like the curriculum for music, it is just a violin class. Right?
It is. Correct. So this one we did focus on reading achievement.
Mm-hmm.
But there is another one for things in the arts. And so the second one that I'm going to do, because I'm going to do another one, because you can apply as many times mm-hmm. as you want to with different parts. Like if I didn't get this one, like if I get this one, I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't get this one, we can apply. So that's my backup one.
You remember back in the day when we had to buy a recorder?
Yes.
I heard a recorder be costing a whole lot of money now. Because yes. I still look at a recorder as a flute. And it kind of like a flute.
Yes.
Okay. Because I think I talked to one of my friends where they said they was fussing because of how much this recorder cost.
Yeah.
And she was like, I ain't got it.
Nothing's cheap anymore.
Especially for her not to even halfway play it.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So I can only imagine what a violin. I like violins. I think violin is pretty wonderful.
But we don't make our family, like, case in point, they're sharing them now. We have, I think, 47 or 48. We're sharing them amongst our 74 mm-hmm. scholars. We would like for them to be one-to-one. But yeah,
costs money.
$400. It's a lot of money.
Costs money. But I mean, unless you go to the parent and say, "Hey, do you give the parent a choice where it's like, this is how much it costs? You know, if you want to choose to get your child this."
We do have two or three. Actually, we have three scholars, because a lot of them are doing. Our violin teacher, Mr. Cooper, he's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He hails from Chicago and he's trained in his church, and he's mm-hmm. just an awesome, dynamic guy. And so he's doing a lot of private lessons for scholars, mm-hmm. and so they are starting to purchase them.
Okay. Well, that helps. That helps a little bit.
It does. It does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Ms. McKinley, I enjoyed this conversation. You was nervous. I'm gonna say this up. You said you was nervous, but how do you feel about the conversation?
Very good. Very good. Very organic. And you asked some questions that I think you thought I was gonna be nervous or uncomfortable to answer, but I wasn't.
I try to be mindful, because I understand you have a job.
Yeah.
Like, you have a job, and, you know, of course, you know, and this also is a time, and I'm not big on, and I've always said this, and I hope other people hear it, I don't look at myself as trying to promote something.
Right.
But I do understand the access of promotion mm-hmm. on the show. So I just try to keep it organic as possible. So when I'm talking to people, and you're talking about your profession, I want to do my best in protecting that as much as I can.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to put anybody in any compromising situation. So if I say something and I'm asking the question, I'm flat out going to say, look, I want to know this.
Yeah.
You know, I want to know this. And it's up to you how you want to answer it. But I'm definitely not going to put you in this. So I want to make sure to make people feel comfortable. And I just want to say that online because I say this offline all the time, but I want to be very mindful of the ones that I bring on because I want you all to feel comfortable. And I also want you to speak about, you know, what you got going on because, again, this is a big deal for you. You are doing everything you can in your job, your profession, and you're trying to grow it. You know, I hope this small percentage helps that, you know. So.
Yeah, thank you. And just seriously, just anyone who will be listening to this, just know that I grew up in a public school. Mm-hmm. My husband did, and I was and loved my public school experience. And just know that every kid's experience is different. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that our children are happy and they are unique. Mm-hmm. And it's a safe space for Black children. And that really, private, public, wherever, the bottom line is, it's a safe space for your kid to be who they are. It's a safe space for them to grow their confidence. Mm-hmm. I've seen it in my own child. Nervous, shy, timid, all of that will get up now and play violin at 6 years old in front of 200 people. That's a big deal to grow that. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the potential. I know you said a small, but you know, you don't know who's out here listening.
I like to be modest, but I think people, I think people are listening. Yeah. But I definitely enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. Again,
I didn't know much about friendship. You gave me some information. I knew about the church, but wasn't, you know, big on friendship day.
Yes.
Day school. But anyway, at the end of the show, I always ask the same thing. What's next? What's next for you and professionally? And what's next for friendship?
Very good. So what's next for us at friendship? Well, first, we are, I want to share with you, I just looked at my numbers, and we had 50 inquiries this year, and we accepted almost 40 new kids this school year. I just got another inquiry 2 days ago about a kindergartner for this year, and I had to wait list because I have 18 kindergartners. It's a big class.
Mm-hmm.
So what's next for us is that we're growing and glowing, and we have an open house December 11th that we're going to start advertising for. The families can come in, tour, see what we have to offer, see the teachers in action, see the babies in action, see them learning and like I said, being happy and healthy. And we really want to, we are looking forward to in the next year planning something big in terms of fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
A gala, you know, a plated dinner, something that, you know, where we have entertainment for the night. And so we're really looking to really get our name out there.
Mm-hmm.
But also to just continuing to increase our rigor. I have some top-notch teachers in my building.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing amazing work. And so we've slowly introduced some of the things that folks were asking for. Cross country for youth, soccer shots. We've never done soccer shots at Friendship Day School. They're right down in the Friendship Sportsplex.
Okay.
So some things are not traditional for our kids that we're doing. And so we're just going to increase things in our STEM lab and our science lab. So growing and glowing for sure and pushing the bar and exposing our kids to things that they would not necessarily have the exposure to at the other schools that they may go to.
Okay. All right. Well, Ms. McKinley, let everybody know where they can find the information at Friendship Day if they want to know.
Yeah, yeah. So we have an IG page, Friendship Day Charlotte. We have a Facebook page as well. You can go just good old-fashioned website, friendshipdayschoolcharlotte.org. And you can call us up. Schedule a talking tour. We come and tour. You don't have to wait until open house. We tour families all the time. You can find us there. And we are not hard to find. And we welcome all families.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Ms. McKinley, for sitting down with Who Got Next. And I do appreciate it.
All right.
Yo, this is E-Dub for Who Got Next. You can catch me on IG. Look at whatever I got going on there. Look at all past guests for Who Got Next _CLT on IG. If you have any questions, any comments, good, bad feedback, indifferent feedback, hit me up on my email. My email is whogotnextclt@gmail.com. And like I always state, if you out there doing something dope, I'm going to find you. I am going to find you, okay? If you got something dope going on, trust me, we're going to sit down and talk about what you got going on next. All right? Peace.